are you calling bums, pal?
You!
Randy!
Listen, we got two more of us in the back seat. Pity the back seat. If you're
Stop
looking
it.
For a fight...
I am looking for a fight!
Come on, put
Let's
the
go!
Down.
Come on, right now!
Come
right
on!
Now.
All right, and we are up.
Hey, everybody, this is Andy Katz, kind of taking the place of Jimmy Ferrari for the second time as a host on Delta Bravo Urban Exploration Team podcast. And I'm so excited about today's discussion and talk and meeting. You're going to see and hear a meeting of two people that have met sort of under Delta Bravo urban exploration circumstances. And I find this whole thing so much fun and so rewarding, because when you meet somebody who is open to the idea of connection and open to the idea of letting creative things happen in their lives, it's really a gift to be able to record that and to kind of share it with other people, because that's kind of what makes me tick as an art teacher. That's my full-time job. I'm an art teacher. And, you know, a lot of us people who are listening and people who are listening for the first time know that this group is kind of brought together by Danny Boy O'Connor through the spirit of exploration, through the idea of finding something that you're really interested in and tracking it down, whether it's the Outsider's House in Tulsa or a photograph that was taken almost 20 years ago more than 20 years ago on the streets of New York City. So there's a lot of us out here doing this, and it's just for pleasure. It's for fun and for connection. And today's guest, Sean Murphy, is a perfect example of how this hobby, for lack of a better word, can lead to really interesting connection and interaction. So I want to introduce Sean sort of formally, and then I want to apologize because I've shared his story through a movie called In Search of Sean Murphy, and that's how we're connected now. But I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. I want to tell you what I know about Sean, and I'm going to find out about Sean just today. Talking,
you're going to find out the real shit now.
After That's right.
Your video, I was like, God, man, this is the G-rated version.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And just from all the people who are commenting on the picture and all of the Facebook posts, your friends and your fans, they're like, yeah, does this guy even know who you are? So we have there's some stories you can share that'll set the record straight.
Yeah.
Here's the formal intro that I have. Sean Murphy grew up in Florida's panhandle, also known as the Redneck Riviera, which explains his passion for capturing gritty Americana. He is as much a master at capturing spontaneous moments as he is at delivering visually stunning high concept marketing projects. Sean has directed national commercials, shot countless music and film celebrities, and been visually behind award-winning ad campaigns for some of the biggest corporations on the planet. And then when I looked through your rock archive, it was called the Rock Vault on his website, I saw pictures of Ice Cube, Weezer, Tommy Lee, Jamie Presley, the Beastie Boys. Actually, I don't know if I saw them on there, but I know about those. Green Day, among many others. And I'm really excited about having Sean Murphy here. And I wanted to basically say hi and let you kind of explain maybe what got you here. How are you here today as you see it?
With you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a trip, man. So those type of things, I don't know why they seem to happen in my life frequently. I think it's what, you know, you put out, you get, you know. And I mean, we'll get into it. My past was there was a lot of darkness way back when. But since I've been, you know, sober for 12 years and kind of that's my purpose, my primary purpose. and I moved to Florida, and I've got a bunch of different things happening. My life is a lot different than it was in Los Angeles, where I lived for about 28 years, I guess. You know, it's just a different time now. I still shoot all the time. I still shoot music. I shoot mostly advertising. And here in Florida, I work 90% of my time. I work for a company called Boat Boards, which is it's an outdoor company. So I travel around the world shooting videos and pictures for them most of the time. But in what little free time I have a big studio building that I bought in Florida and made it a work live space. I have a couple of kids that I mentor, and they've been scanning images from the rock era, if you will. I mean, the rock era is still going on, right? Because I mean, I shot Pussifer in New Orleans a couple months ago, or whenever they play there, maybe it was 3 months ago. So I'm still connected with all these things and shooting, but 1989 to 2005 is a period of time where it was just negatives, right? So we've been scanning and archiving all those things for the last 4 years. And then out of the blue the other day, when you sent me an email, and I was like, I tend to just gloss over those messages because there's a million of them, but there's a lot of them, and a lot of them are, I won't use the word nonsense, maybe just, they're kind of just a lot of people asking me for stuff, yeah, or, you know, prints or whatever. You know, I try to get the back to everybody, but I'll kind of put them on the back burner for whatever reason. I never really go to my business Facebook page either, but for some reason I opened your email, and I was just like, and my girlfriend was in the other room, and a girl that works for me was scanning that day. I said, y'all come in here, watch this with me. And they watched it, and they're just blown away, you know. And I was like, and it was done so well. And I mean, I hate to say it, but you would have done a better recollection of the day than I would probably do for you. I mean, there's a couple things that I'll elaborate on, but you got it right. I mean, in the sense that you nailed it. If you asked me today where I shot that, I wouldn't be able to tell you. Like, I don't remember because it was a blur. I went to New York, and back then I was shooting a lot for alternative press, so magazines. So they would send me, I was always just, you know, cruising all around and shooting. But I remember the Beastie Boys being a big deal because I too am a huge Beastie Boys fan. Beastie Boys, PJ Harvey, for me, the big shoots for me back then were, you know, I went to England to shoot PJ Harvey. That was huge for me. The Beastie Boys was huge for me. But this job in particular, and I think you nailed it there, and I was trying to remember the concept, and I drank a lot back then. I was younger. I was like, you know, late 20s or something. Mm-hmm. And I partied all the time, and that's kind of was the lifestyle back then. And I remember the assignment, I think, was to shoot a cover of the Beastie Boys in New York and then shoot Rage Against the Machine. And there are going to be two covers running at the same month, and there was something in the cover from both shoots that connected the two covers, and I botched it kind of even before all the other bad stuff happened. I got the assignment wrong, and I didn't nail it the way there was a miscommunication, and so I can't remember what I was trying to do, but I think I was going to connect the two with like a guitar amp cord or something like that, or maybe maybe Mike D's leg was going to be—he was jumping and it was going to be going into the other cover.
Yeah, because we saw some alternative pictures that were inside before you moved outside.
Yeah, I think so. I went in and I had my assistant Nate Bressler with me, and he shot some of those behind the scenes pictures with a little snapshot camera, and I had a makeup artist, and we were just told to go to the rehearsal space, and when we went in, they were rehearsing, and I thought that was really cool, and I was like, oh man, I really want to go into watch them rehearse, but I wasn't allowed. There was another photographer in there, and he knew them. He was like in their circle. I don't remember what his name was, but he was in there shooting them, and Ad Rock had just hurt his leg or something. He had some kind of ailment. That's why he had a cane.
Oh, okay.
And they something, I can't remember, but something was up with him. He had a cane that day. I think he hurt his leg or something.
Well, when I read the article about the alternative press article, it mentioned something about Ad Rock being epileptic. And then you had brought a ring light with you. And yeah. That was just another layer.
So nobody tells you these things. I walk in, and back then I would shoot a lot of times with music. I would shoot a lot with a big flat. It wasn't like the ring lights the kids use today for beauty light. It was a big pro photo, powerful, like flash ring light. So it looked like a strobe. And Ad Rock was like, man, I'm epileptic, and that could create a seizure. So I was like, well, that would have been good to know, you know,
right,
a while ago before I kind of prepped this whole shoot. I had, you know, I spent a lot of time on conceptualizing it, but I also brought some studio lights, and then we set up that Seamless by their equipment room or something to shoot some safety shots of just them on white Seamless so that we could Photoshop. That was always my plan B. So we could pull them out and we could create something if all else failed. And they were, you know, they were cool guys, but they seemed busy and at first and just kind of a little distracted, you know. Sometimes people are really into it, and it's not that they weren't into it. They just, you know, they just were doing their job and they were tired. They've been playing all day. So as I walked into the studio, my assistant and I were like, oh, look at that. We just noticed a couple of things. I always do that too. When I walk up to any shoot, wherever I go, two things happen when I get out of my car or whatever I'm doing. I have my camera on because you don't know what kind of shit might pop off, and you got to be ready for it. And the other thing I do is I look around. I do a pre-scout around this area where I'm going to be. So I always have a backup kind of plan. And I noticed that car sitting
there.
It was like lit on fire or something. I don't know. It was drivable, it looked like, but it was just a beater in New York City, you know, one of those. And then I noticed this teddy bear on this truck. There's a couple of little cool things. And then when the epileptic thing came up, I was like, you know, let's just rip outside for a second, you know. And we walked outside and I was like, oh yeah, I got jump in this car. And they're like, man, you guys brought this? This is cool shit. And they sat in there, and I remember them sitting in the car for so long. They're talking about their tour. So they were actually having like a meeting when I shot those pictures. They weren't even paying attention to me. They all sat in the front seat, and then they started talking about their whatever travel plans or whatever they had going on. And then we shot that and shot outside in front of the teddy bear and some other things. But my assistant, I didn't know he was shooting, which I didn't even know existed for a long time. And actually, when you posted your thing, I was like, oh, I forgot about those. It's insane because they all match up.
And that was the tip off for me. I think I mentioned to you, and certainly in the movie, that I had those pictures on my phone for 2 years, I think, because this group does this. We just dump a bunch of pictures on our phone that we find interesting, and we'll save them. And then when we're in New York or anywhere else and we realize we're a couple blocks from something, we'll walk down and check it out. So I was in New York in February, and I was staying on, I think, 28th Street. And I'm so nerdy about it. I drop little pins and flags. Yeah. And sure enough, the flag from a white box was right there. And I, at the time, I didn't even know your name. So I don't know if you know this part of the story, because it was cut out of the movie. We kept the movie short. But shout out to Nick Light, by the way. Nick Light is the director of the movie. He's the one who crafted it. I just happened to be in it. You know, he interviewed me more or less, and then he pieced it all together. But Nick Light's the genius behind all this, not me. And so there I was walking down the street to find these pictures, and I kind of pre-found them on Google Maps and realized that the buildings were sort of in the same, they looked the same. I thought, that's it, you know, that's the right spot. Walked down there, and then I realized from the picture. And that was one of my questions I had, was who took the pictures of you taking the pictures? You said Nate, somebody?
Yeah, Nate Bressler, who's also a really, really great photographer. And he's doing really cool things these days too with the Native Americans up in South Dakota. But he was my assistant for a few years in Los Angeles. And so he took those photos, and just on like a little, one of those little Contax cameras.
Amazing. And I had sort of given up finding it. I think I found 6 or 7 pictures from the shoot, the one in the car, and there was just nothing. I mean, it was just New York somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think I may have found it from doing a simple search like Beastie Boys, New York City street. And then you see what pops up, because then you can go find it. And there was nothing I could find except for that one picture of you from the side taking a picture of them in front of White Box, which I guess was some sort of art studio or art gallery or event space, something like that. And once I typed that in, all these years later, it's still there. And then I knew I was in the right spot. Funny little anecdote or addendum. I had an art show of my own. Well, I shouldn't say my own. It was a couple people, but it was my first New York City art show. Was in the building that's behind Yauch when he's sitting in the car van.
Cool.
So many years later, I was in that building, not knowing that you had taken his pictures there. So it's a small world, and when you start scratching the surface a little bit, you realize, wow, like I've already been here. I just didn't know all the cool stuff that happened in this space. So
that's so cool, man. I'm glad you did. I was super glad you did that. I just got done listening to Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue did the Heroin Diaries. I just got done listening to that, and I was so impressed. And then you did your thing. I was like, God, man, it would have been so cool if I would have had the forethought to do some sort of diary back in those days. Or I never carried it. Like now, I don't go anywhere without it. I carry a Leica a camera around my neck 24 hours a day. But back then I didn't do that. And so I missed a lot of, I don't know. I forget a lot of things. And only as I'm going back through my negative scans now, things become meaningful, but back then they didn't mean anything. Like these mundane kind of, especially the Beastie Boys, like after you posted, I looked back through them. I was like, oh, look at all these pictures I missed. Like, mm-hmm. I've changed as an artist, I think, and so I look at things differently. And back then, as a young photographer, I don't know how my vision was just a little bit different. I was newer, and I just didn't see things the same way. So it's nice to go back and revisit those things. And
yeah, and it's been 23 years. It was the year 2000, and again, I have to give some credit to some people, because I loved the pictures. I found where they were shot. And then because we were getting ready to do some kind of a extra thing with this, I wanted to find out who took the pictures. So I went on to one of the Beastie Boys Facebook pages that I'm a part of. And I guess I asked the right person, because I said, does anybody know who took these pictures and when? I said, I know where, but I don't know when and who took them. And this guy, Jim D, who lives in the UK, He punted the question to his friend, Jenna Goldberg. And Jenna Goldberg immediately was like, Sean Murphy, 2000. And I was like, that's crazy. That's so crazy. And so here we are because of that. And it's like all of these little pieces had to kind of come together. It would have been one thing for me to run down the spot. We've done that. We've all done that. And it's really great. But I love this extra layer of meeting you and hearing the story from you rather than me kind of guessing or trying to figure out what really happened or you know, how did you end up there and those kind of things. And if I could stop talking and get you back on the I love the way that story ends, because that really became all of the people that I know are Beastie Boys fans. We all love the Beastie Boys, most of the people I hang out with. And we didn't realize that there was a significance to those pictures because of how it ended up with Rage Against the Machine and the Beastie Boys You want to take that?
God, dude. I mean, well, first of all, I botched the you know, there's another layer which is super jacked up, which was we left the Beastie Boys shoot and immediately went out to like a Thai restaurant and went and started drinking. And we had to leave. Nate and I are flying out the next morning at like our flight left at like, I don't know, 7 a.m. or something from Newark. And so we went out partying, got really drunk. And the building we were staying with some of Nate's friends in the building we were staying at caught on fire. Jeez. And we were walking down the street and there was, I mean, I'm talking about flames coming out windows, fire with a fire truck ladder going up into it, like a big fire. And we sat down on a stoop with my camera, which had half of the Beastie Boys shoot in it that I had not taken the rest of the film out. And I left the camera on the stoop. We walked away and went drinking more. And an hour later, I was like, oh my God, I can't find my camera. Mm-hmm. We walked back to the street and a little kid brought me my camera, like a little kid that lived in the neighborhood. Like they had it and he gave my camera back. So I could have lost it then. And then we drank all night. We went to the airport. We missed our flight. I mean, it was just such a crazy time. And then, of course, we got back and I get a phone call that Mike D had broken his arm or his collarbone or something like that. And that was created a problem. Like my agent called me and told me this. And then the following week, I was to shoot Raising Against the Machine. I showed up we shot them at the Dragonfly on Santa Monica Boulevard. And we went in there and they were just off. And I've shot them before. And I knew Tom Morello a little bit because I'd shot him independently. So I kind of I knew the bass player. I knew all the guys because I've shot them a few times. And they were all off and they were acting weird. And they were shooting kind of reluctantly. It sucked. I was like, come on, guys. Like, it was like pulling teeth that day. And so I just did your basic. It was pretty basic. But I did do some cool multiple exposure stuff with them that's never been seen that okay. I was looking at that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't good for anything, but now it's cool.
Yeah.
but then I think it was, I want to say I shot them and like 2 days later, they were like broken up or some. I mean, my memory is a little fuzzy, but that's what happened. And so,
I was going to introduce you as the Angel of Death photographer, but
I want a shirt. And so my ex-wife actually, when that thread was going on Facebook, she says something about this other band, which I had forgot. There's many bands that this kind of shit has happened, but there's another band that I was going to shoot. And I had set up for the shoot and they got in a, it's not funny. They got in a tour bus. They got in a bus, like rolled over or something happened coming from Sacramento and like nobody died, but it was they like canceled their tour. And my ex-wife was laughing. She's like, remember, God, I can't remember the name of that band. But anyway, so it's happened more than once.
So who do you remember? Did someone actually give you that name? Was there somebody who started calling you that or was
it was jokingly thrown around. I don't know if it was my agent or some. I don't know. It was just kind of like one of those. I had a lot of names back then. You know, I was caught. I was wild. And, you know, I think everybody was pretty wild. It's funny you're doing something with Danny Boy because I used to assist a guy. I kind of knew him and he was in my circle too, because I assisted a dude, Steven Stickler, who was kind of a photographer that mentored me when I first moved to Los Angeles. And he used to shoot House of Pain. So I would be on those shoots with him. And then I kind of ran into him later when he was dating this model that I used to shoot and then some other ways. What's the singer's name? The other guy?
Everlast.
Everlast. I saw him at FedEx next to my studio right as I was leaving town to LA to move here. He was like almost kind of didn't recognize him, but he was like in some slides and kind of looked like he just woke up. He was at FedEx in Canoga Park. I was like, what's up, man? That was kind of cool. But that is cool. Super small world. The music photography world is very small, especially that kind of group, the early 2000s, late 90s, there wasn't a lot of people shooting, like, because it was film. It was a lot harder to be a photographer back then. And there just was kind of this tight little group, and we all kind of ran around in circles shooting kind of the same bands, and a band would come through and we'd all kind of shoot them for different, you know, publications or record labels. And so it was cool. It's really neat. And it's nice for it to kind of come back full circle there. Who's the photographer, the Hispanic guy who hangs with Cartoon, shoots film still? Oreo, gosh dang it, he runs with all those cats out in East LA. Anyway, I'll think about it. Cypress Hill, he runs with Cypress Hill and Cartoon and those guys. But I just saw a cool piece on him, and he was saying that everything he shoots doesn't mean shit for 20 years. So he shoots stuff now going, that'll be good in 20 years.
Wow.
And I was like, that's interesting. Because I never thought that. I've never thought that way, but it is kind of true. It's been 20 years and now everything kind of comes back, or it's cool again, or people are interested. Weezer, I've been shooting for 20 years solid, like everything with them. Like, I'm their guy. And that Weezer crowd is insane. Like, they're aggressive. Like, they're still super active. It sounds like your Beastie Boys group, and this Weezer group is, you know, they're starving for any content. And I had this guy that has the Instagram
the band was here. Yeah,
and that dude does a good job too, and he did one of my Weezer album covers. And he wrote me, and that was exciting for me too, because I thought that was really cool, because I had been watching him for a while, and I was
pretty honest. he's great, and he gets around too, because he's done a lot of New York. And what's kind of nice is when I do something that I feel like that no one else has done, and then I'll see him do it, and vice versa. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like, I'll see him do something, and I'm like, I got to get there next time. And it's like a healthy competition, kind of. It's this healthy, like, we're all sort of pushing each other. And it's interesting. We have some people who get into horror movies. Jimmy Ferrari, the guy that's usually the host of this podcast, does a lot of horror movies, and he does mafia mob hits. So, like, where murders were happened, and a lot of New York mob stuff. And then I've kind of taken on the hip hop mantle. I love classic hip hop, and things from the 80s and early 90s. That's my wheelhouse. So I'm always running down. I just came back from Hollis, Queens, and I did a second visit to find a whole bunch of Run DMC shots. And it's just really fun. And to your point about the guy who says, well, this isn't going to be important for 20 more years. I guess you just never really know what's going to be important. And
you don't.
I love that you remember the details about the stuffed animal on the grill of the truck, and the bombed out car, and even just the ring light story, and how it all connected to all of us. Everybody I know that was a Beastie Boys fan had tickets to that tour. And I hadn't seen Rage Against the Machine yet. And that was sort of my dream bill, to see Rage and the Beastie Boys on the same bill. I was a big fan of both of them. And I missed it because they broke up, and because Mike D broke his collarbone. Obviously, Yauch passed away. I did manage to see the Beastie Boys a couple times before that live, but I didn't see Rage Against the Machine until they were coming around in 2020 for the election cycle and all that. Got tickets. I got so excited to see him. We bought a whole bunch of tickets for DC and Madison Square Garden, and then COVID hit, and that tour got canceled as well. So I was like, the universe is conspiring against me ever seeing this band play live. And then last summer, I saw them 3 times in 8 days because all of the tickets we bought back in 2020 were still.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Honored. Yeah.
You know, when I was in school in Boston, I saw it was night must have been 1991 or 92. I didn't know who they were, but I knew who House of Pain was, and I living in South Boston, House of Pain was a big deal, and so we got tickets to go see House of Pain with Rage Against the Machine.
Oh man!
And Rage Against the Machine was opening up for House of Pain.
Wow!
And it was really cold, and it was outside. I remember steam coming off their head, and they were really cool. And you reminded there's one more Angel of Death. There's many Angel of Death stories, but I almost killed Tom from Rage Against Tom, right? The bass player
from Rage.
Tim Comerford.
Yeah.
So this bicycle magazine, this mountain biking magazine, is like, hey man, I know you shot Rage Against the Machine. He was with what's the super band he was in with?
Audioslave.
So Audioslave was playing at the Wiltern in Los Angeles, and he's like, hey man, can you do this? I want to get a shot at Tim with his mountain bike. He carries it on his tour bus, and you can go there before the show. And so I go down there, and there's like a line of kids like around the building, like a mile. And I go in, I meet him. He's so amped. He's the only dude in that band that I get along, that I get on with, because he's like fired up and he's energetic and he's down for whatever. And he's like, what are we going to do, man? He goes, I can jump some people. I can do whatever. So we started out like, we went outside and I got a bunch of kids and I lined them up on their backs, you know, on the sidewalk. Oh, and he was bunny hopping them, like a bunch of them. And then we keep adding one. And the manager was standing there and he's like, man, we got to getting all mad at me. Like, obviously you want to see somebody get hit because you keep adding one. You know, and so we did that for a while, and then like he's like, man, what else can we do? Like, I want to jump something. I was like, well, can you jump off like right on the top of your tour bus? And the manager's like, no, fuck that. You're not. They gotta play a show. He's gonna get hurt, and then he won't be able to play a show. And my assistant's like, dude, like, how many bands do you want to fucking destroy? <That's right. laughs> on the back of the Wiltern, there was this. There's a fire escape, one of those janky, you know, like the like in New York, the drop down. And there's one that goes up the back of the Wiltern in the alley, like 3 stories high. And it goes like an angle that's not even barely walkable. It's like you're almost like as a ladder. It goes like this, and then like this, and then like this. So it's like a zigzag.
Yeah.
I have the pictures. I'll send you a contact sheet of a picture of it. But I was like, man, do you think you can, no one was around. I said, man, you think you can like ride from down the top of that down? And he looks at it and he thinks for a minute. He goes, fuck it. I think I can do it. It was like I challenged him, you know? And he climbs up that thing with his bike, and his manager walked out screaming at me like, you motherfucker, he's gonna die. And then I started freaking out like, man, because you're going straight down like 3 stories. If he endowed, he would die. I mean, you're going to die.
But you're egging him on.
Turns and shit. And he went up there, and we were all just, and he was like too far to really talk to at the top of a building. And there's like a little group of us down there, security guards like on the thing, like get ready for call 911 or paramedics or some shit. And he gets leaned way back on his bike, and he fucking made it seamlessly and then did it again.
He twice. Did it. Oh my
and then
God.
The man was like, you're out, dude. You're done. Like, you know, this is over. But that could have ended really badly, too. There's another. I almost killed a guy, lit some fire. The guitar player for Butcher Babies. I have a picture of him where we did a ring of gasoline. And we lit it on fire. And he disappeared. We all thought he was dead. And then he jumped out of the fire. And we got the shot. It was super awesome. And then there's a really good one of my favorite Weezer pictures of all time. One of my second shoots I ever did with them. We're in Hollywood Boulevard. I just met them and they liked me, so they were inviting me to start shooting them. and they were in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard and had them stand on the line between the, you know, the middle, the center line of the traffic. So in the middle where the traffic was going by. So I wanted to do a long exposure of the cars going in front of them. They were just kind of in a row. Well, they were in the center line, and then a bus came and Rivers leaned back just a little bit. And then one of them puts her arms out. I mean, the bus skimmed their sweaters at like 45 miles an hour. And I was, took the picture and they're going, and their manager was like, you motherfucker. Like, so I was
always a manager there, like wagging his finger at you.
Yeah, they're always looking, man. They're always trying to keep them alive.
Wow. So, yeah, wow. That's so I was thinking when you were telling the stories, wasn't Timmy C the one, there was like in the early days of the MTV Music Awards, somebody climbed up. He climbed up on the thing.
In a rafter or a big palm tree or something.
And nobody knew who he was. They were like, we think he's one in, with one of the bands, but he looked like just some random guy climbing up. So
he got in trouble for that.
That's great though.
Yeah, but yeah,
I mean that's unreal.
They were cool, man. But super interesting. Fun times. I got stories. It never ends, and never, and the amount of stories never ends. So,
well, you know, and that's the thing. Like you're saying, you wish you had kept a journal. I feel like in a lot of ways, having a camera is akin to having a journal, because while I draw and I'll write things down in a journal, I did that for many years as a visual artist. I don't know, having this library of iconic images that span several decades now. That's your own kind of journal in a way. I feel like it's a photo journal. It's and the fact that you're scanning all your negatives, mm-hmm. and then right before I hit record, you were saying how, you know, it was bringing you back a little bit seeing some of these pictures. Is there something in your archives that you had forgotten about completely that you've seen recently
there's a lot. I mean, the most fun part for me, I wish I had more time in my life. I mean, I moved to Florida and thought that, and my kids graduated high school, I thought I would have all this time, and I'm just even more busy now. But my favorite thing to do is kind of go through the contact sheets, because they're digital now. I can literally go through all the contact sheets. And back then, you know, you're shooting film, so you might shoot like some pictures of the band, and then something cool might be happening over here from my crew or something, and I might pop a picture, or I might give my camera to somebody and I might be in a picture or whatever. And so going back through them, you see these random moments that I didn't even pay attention to when they happened, or when we were selecting images for whatever the story was. So those are always really cool. Then they become something, because I never knew where I would go with my career. I didn't. A lot of people are dead now, or whatever they've done, or they've moved on and done different things. So I think they just take on their own meaning. We are working on a book right now with Frank Zappa's son Amit, and I are. He has a company in Los Angeles called I Like You, and they deal with musicians. Estates and archives and all the things that go with them. So he's helping me. We're working on a book right now, which will just be it'll be a book of like these shoots, like maybe the Beastie Boys, and then it'll be a story. Like this story will be kind of an easy read from my voice about the bullet points of what went on with all the cool little, what I would be interested in, which is always kind of like behind the scenes and the making of. That's what interests me. So we're working on that book now, but it's going to probably take a hot minute to finish that.
You know, our group is always, we're always sort of talking about the idea, and people will say, hey, you should put all these in a book. And of course, our big roadblock is that we don't own the photos that we're running down. And some photographers are great about it, and they like what we're doing. And then there's others who are like, take your logo off my artwork. And
crazy. I'm of the mindset, like my Weezer fans are so fanatical and they're always hitting me up. So I actually did a 20-year blog of Weezer with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photos. And I just told him, just take whatever you want, do whatever you want.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, because I, you know, what do I care? You know what I mean? It's fine.
Well, the way we look at it, I get intellectual property and copyright. I understand all that, but it's sort of like the worst part of the art business, in my opinion, because it stifles, I think, connection and creativity, which is the best part of the art world. And, you know, I'm thinking about, I don't know if you've seen the book Contact High. It was by a woman named Vicky Toback. And she, I don't know that she's a photographer herself, but what she did was she found a lot of famous and some not as famous photographers of the hip hop era, the golden age of hip hop between 85 or actually even earlier till about 95 or 2000. And instead of just printing the most famous picture by that photographer, she printed the contact sheets.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was, yeah, because the one I think of off the top of my head is, I think his name is Baron Claiborne. I think I got the name right. He took the really famous picture of Biggie Smalls wearing the crown, the little plastic.
No, that's my homeboy, Clay.
Is it saying his name right?
Clay McBride, maybe? Is that my
name? No, I think it's Baron.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know Clay? Have you
no.
talked with Clay? He's a teacher at RIT too, but he's the hip hop guy. You should hook up with him, man. He's a legend. He's one of my best friends, and he's in my peer group. We came up together and had the same age, but he shot all the hip hop stuff.
Well, I'll do research as soon as we get off the call.
Yeah, and he's from New York City.
Awesome.
And he lives upstate now, because he teaches upstate, but he still shoots all the time, and he's awesome to talk to, man. He's the greatest guy ever.
I'll have to get all of the information from you.
He's amazing.
So in this book, though, the contact high, the contact sheets are in there, and that role of Biggie Smalls wearing the crown, there's, I don't know, maybe 20 other pictures of him posing. Some of them are blurry. Some of them are the depth of field is all screwed up. But there's a couple of him smiling and laughing. And it was so stark in comparison to the famous ones where he's kind of scowling and doing this menacing look. And then, like you're saying, there was a story next to it. And it was about how he was like that a lot of the time. And we just don't know him that way. And I thought that's really cool to sort of see behind the scenes a little bit. We think we know some of these people because we've seen them in pictures or we've seen them on album covers, but we don't know them at all. And I love talking to the photographers and running down photos even more than movie sites or things from TV, because a lot of times there is a connection between the photographer and the person they're shooting. And they do have either other images that we haven't seen, or they have a cool story about them. And that's, you know, that's why we're here. You know, I love it.
Yeah. And I think each band kind of has their favorite photographer they like to work with too. So like, I only shot the Beastie Boys the one time, but Weezer I've shot 100 times. Like, I've been with them for decades. Or Maynard from Tool, I've been working with him since the 90s. So I've worked with him for years and near decades and decades, and kind of grown old together, in a sense. And so I'm always interested to hear what people think about their perspective on like a band or a singer, if I know how they really are. And yeah. I really enjoy talking to people about the artists that I really like. There are a handful that I don't, that I mean, people always ask me, who's your favorite, who's your worst, you know what I mean? I don't like to talk shit about people, but there are some that are that suck. But I used to work a lot for this magazine in Los Angeles called Rap Pages, and the dude that owned Hustler was one of his magazines, but it was all just rap and hip hop artists.
And Larry Flint
publication. So I got to shoot, like, there was a period of time where I was shooting like every hip hop and rap artist there is, like, and a lot of them were the ones that, and I wasn't really in my scene, you know, ever, but I appreciated it. And I really enjoyed, like, when I got to meet Tone Loc, or, oh, cool. Or, you know what I mean? Or like, we're shooting Mac 10 and he rolls up to my little shitty house in the valley with his entourage and like three Ferraris, and we're shooting, and my neighbors are always tripping out, like, what in the world is going on? Or Ice Cube, you know, I've shot him many times, and Dr. Dre, you know, that was really cool. Dr. Dre, you know, that's one of the ones, I love Dr. Dre. I love, he's just one of my favorites, and I was intimidated by him. And when I shot him for Alternative Press, I think too, and they warned me, I said, dude, you gotta be, and I'm super fast. I rolled in there, I shot him in less than 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And he was gonna give me 30 minutes, but his entourage told me, man, you only got 30 minutes, you gotta get the fuck out. I said, all right, motherfucker, I'll do it in 10. So I did it, and it kind of surprised him. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I just started breaking my shit down. He was still sitting there like, you're done? Man, you're badass, I like you. And I was like, in retrospect, I was like, shit, I wish I'd have sat there for 20 more minutes and done some more cool shit with him.
Yeah.
The pictures I took were really awesome, but it was like three contact sheets of images. It was nothing. I mean, sometimes I would roll up and I was either hungover or just being lazy or whatever the thing was. And I shot like one or two rolls, and sometimes I'm shooting 50 rolls, and back in the day, you know, when it's film, or maybe a lot of these free shoots, like Alternative Press didn't pay you for the shoot. It was essentially free. So I was always kind of, and as a photographer, young photographer, we're broke. So it's I got to pay for the film and all that. So a lot of times I think we skimped on, we use leftover film. You know, we would kind of back stock it. We would just use whatever we had. And that was a thing. So as I look through my film stocks of all the shoots I've done, like, it was so random. Like, in the early days when I was broke, it was like, I would do one shoot, had six different types of film, you know, and that in my later days when I was making a lot of money or making money, I could afford to buy all the same film stocks, and shit was more streamlined. I was shooting more. I had my own darkroom. I had people working in the darkroom. Yeah, so it's really fun to look back at those beginning, like the BC Boys and a little bit before them, when it was just, I was a broke dick and just trying to shoot. I remember shooting. I used to work at the Phoenix Hotel in San Francisco, which is where all the bands stay. When they come to the city, they all stay at this small motel that has a pool in it in the Tenderloins, shitty area. But I was a waiter there. And I met these gay dudes that were kind of my closest friends that started this magazine called Surface Magazine. And they were just starting out, but because they had a magazine, they could hit these record labels and get people to do shoots with them. And they knew me from the nightclubs. We partied together. They'd give me all these cool bands, like, you know, Catherine Wheel and Tricky and Debbie Harry and Nina Hagen and Peter Murphy, all the bands I really like. And I remember waiting, I would shoot them, and then I would wait on them. Because they stayed in the hotel, and they'd be sitting at the table. I'm like, hey, what's going on, man? You want a drink from the bar? They're like, what did you just shoot like this morning?
Now,
it's such a crazy time, man.
I take it back. You should probably write all this stuff down
in a journal. It's so insane, man. So insane. But there's so many amazing stories, and what your story for me just kind of. I take it for granted, you know, because I feel like I've done so much, and I don't really think about it because I'm still going really fast. So it's hard to pause and enjoy.
It was 23 years ago, and it was just one afternoon, right? It was
one afternoon, but it's super memorable. And as you said, I think in your film, that shoot got kind of, I mean, they threw some, I think they posted a couple of pictures, but it wasn't a cover. It was just like,
no, I don't think they ever got published. I think they, because the tour got canceled, from what you said in the article, they were never distributed. They were never really, they never did anything with them.
Did they put the pictures in the magazine? I mean, in Alternative Press, like anything? I think there was something.
Like, maybe, I mean, it was an online article, so it was online. But
there you go. So
I don't know if it ever made it to the hard copy, but that was kind of funny because when Nick Light, the director, was like, "Okay, I'm trying to find additional pictures, and I'm having trouble finding even the ones you found." He's like, "Where did you get these?" And I couldn't remember.
I wish you called me. I wish you would have called me when you're doing the thing, because I would have just sent you all the shit.
Oh, well,
I mean, I just sent you all the contact sheets or the digital, because I have them all digitally. I could just, send them to you.
You're welcome to do that.
Anyway. I will. I have them.
That's right incredible.
I'll send them to you. Yeah, they're cool.
That's really generous. And like I was saying, it's not everybody that's willing to either talk about it or feel good about what we're doing, because this community of people that I'm talking about, we all have our own little approach to matching things up. Some of us do like a little side by side thing, like then and now, and other people like me, I'll mash them together where one picture, the old picture is in front of the new picture, and see if how things have changed.
I love that.
Yeah, me too. I get such a kick out of it, and it's sort of my drug of choice. I get like a real high from it when I go out and find something. I live in Maryland, so I'm not too far. I'm very close to DC and Baltimore, and then to get up to New York is about 3 hours, so it's not bad at all. But there's people who have gone on trips to do this stuff, who've gone across country, and they gather up movies and they gather up some of it's history based, where something historic happened. But this is one of the things I love about this photo shoot that you did is I didn't think it was anything but cool pictures of the Beastie Boys. But then when I found out, the more I read, the more I realized, oh, this is that moment. In fact, when I told somebody the story of Mike D breaking his collarbone and the tour getting canceled and how you you were blamed or you felt responsible, the guy I was telling the story to, he's like, "I thought they just made that up. Like, I thought that something else happened and that they just made up that he broke his collarbone riding his bike." And I'm like, "No, I think it's totally true." So it's kind of cool. I mean, we all love those little bits of trivia. And you said it before about your Weezer fans. We miss this stuff. We miss the Beastie Boys. We miss, even just 90s hip hop or early 2000s. Some of these things, like you said, people have passed away or things have changed. It's not all the same. And your photos give us like this kind of glimpse. I know it's corny, but I always bring up the fact that it's a little bit like time travel. When I get to visit these places, like I said, I went to Hollis. We did a movie called In Search of Run DMC. That was the first one we did. And then when I went back this past week, I kind of hit a bunch of spots that I had missed before. And it really feels like you're going back in time when you're matching up these pictures that are, in that case, 35 years old. You really get a chance to see how things have changed and how they haven't, and how... You can picture the people in that spot, in that space.
It's emotional. The guy, well, who's that cat? They did a Beastie. Who is the Beastie Boys photographer that passed away? There was that cool documentary.
Ricky Powell.
That was badass. I mean,
yep.
You know, that's kind of like me with Weezer. Like I related to him. I also related to his drug use and all that, because that was kind of my path for a long time. But that was a really good documentary, and it's just I love behind the scenes shit. I love to hear how photographers met, because a lot of it shouldn't have ever happened, and that's my case with a lot of bands. It's just like right place, right time. Yeah. Met this person, it wouldn't have happened. This wouldn't have happened, and for me, I have these milestones, if you will, or these pillars that I in my life, that there's few of them, they're the big things that made it all happen. The one I can pinpoint back to one person that made most of my shit happen, and then there's Norman Wonderly, who was the art director at Alternative Press for forever, and now he lives in Los Angeles and he works for a record label. but he was the one that gave me all my shit. Like, he just loaded me up with all my shit, cool shit, you know, that, and every time I'd meet one of these bands, not every time, but oftentimes, he introduced me to Weezer, introduced me to many other bands that became my friends. And then I became, then I shot them for years to come. And then it did make me money in the long run, because I would shoot their album covers and stuff like that. But there was never money in the music industry. You did music because you loved the music, right?
Right.
And you then, you know, your hope is to one day shoot advertising and make big money, which I did and still do. But the music stuff in those days back then, when I was really broke and poor and barely could afford a $500 car, that was the beast. That was that era. That was important to me. And those are the really good memories still to this day, you know? So thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask you, I have to admit, I got on your Instagram and I dug a little bit for information, and just so I was prepared for our conversation. And I got caught up watching a video of you unrolling some Iggy Pop photos.
Mm.
And those were not your photos, right? Those were friends of yours who took those?
Yeah, so I have a group of friends from Los Angeles that I came up with that we all used to hang, which is pretty cool. Like, there's a small group of us that shot most of the music stuff, I feel like. Clay McBride, Carlos Sorrell, Reggie Casagrande, Cheryl Neals, a few others. And there was a dark room that you could rent in Los Angeles and Hollywood, a dark room space where you could rent hourly and go in and print color prints. And we would all print our jobs there and that we had done, and it was like we'd all hang out and exchange stories and of our shoots and experiences and look at each other's prints and help each other fine-tune our craft. And then we all became, you know, bigger photographers, and we kind of split up and went our own ways. We're still connected, though. We still all talk a lot, and everyone's done really well. And that particular guy, Travis Shin, he's a guy to talk to too. He shot a ton of he shoots music every single day. That's all he does. He was my assistant, my first assistant for about 10 years. And he then, you know, started shooting on his own, and he shoots music now. So I never personally have gotten to shoot Iggy Pop, but I have a lot of Iggy Pop. There's one on my wall. I don't think you can see it from there. It's Iggy Pop and Debbie Harry.
You show it on your Instagram. You do a little tour on your Instagram. Oh,
okay. All right, cool.
Do you remember?
So Iggy Pop, and then I have a bunch of photographer friends that have shot Iggy Pop. So I have them throughout the different eras of his career. But last year, Iggy lives in Miami, and I live in Fort Walton Beach, which is up on the Panhandle near Pensacola. So I'm 40 miles from Pensacola, Florida, which is on the Panhandle. So it's like a 13-hour drive to Miami. But he was shooting Iggy, Travis was shooting Iggy Pop for a music video. And I just wanted to meet him. I was like, dude, I'll drive down and be your bitch. I'll be a PA. I'll get Iggy coffee, whatever. I just want to be there. You know what I mean? So I drove all the way down and literally went and got Iggy his snacks and some coffee and got to just be in the room with him, because me, that's like Jesus Christ to me. I'm 54. I've been listening to him since I was a kid. Seen him in concert a gazillion times. If I got to shoot the Ramones, I could die. You know what I mean? But that never happened. But I used to watch them in concert all the time, and Iggy's one of my heroes. So I got to go down there and meet him. And then as a gift, Travis gave me those three beautiful prints, which are now on my studio wall framed. And they're like the focal point of my studio, which is really
now cool. Does he always work that large, or did he just make them big for you?
He did that for me, but he sells prints through Morrison Gallery, Morrison Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And sure. So does Clay McBride. All my friends are kind of with them. So he sells images through there. And I think, you know, you can buy images from Travis, those online, and that big if you wanted them. But he sent those to me as a gift.
I've been looking at the at Clay McBride's photos, and they're some of them I'm familiar with, and others. You weren't kidding. He took everybody in hip hop. It's great.
Everybody, man.
Yeah,
he's a legend. That guy. You got to talk to him.
Yeah, if he'll talk to me, I'll definitely.
Clay will talk to you. He's generous as they come, man. He's a teacher. He's a professor. He lives for mentorship. He's one of the best teachers. And whenever I have a question about, you know, mentorship or things I'm struggling with kids that I'm helping, he's the guy I call, and he always gives me his. He'll pick up the phone and helps me all the time. He's great, super great.
Where is he in New York? He's in New York.
He lives in upstate. He's from New York City, but now lives near his. You know, he's a professor at RIT. He teaches photography. Oh, right. So he lives upstate. I think comes back to the city to work frequently. But
that's awesome. Yeah, great work. Yeah, that's so cool. I love that you're all connected like that too, and that you've maintained a connection, because I mean, I'm sure on some level it can be competitive, but it's nice that it doesn't always have to be.
It used to be when we were in our late 20s and shit. Like it was a fun competitive though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we were just kind of rubbing each other's face, and you're running around, and it's before cell phones. So I love that also. I love cell phones. I love the technology now. It's great. And I love how fast I can work, but it's also great how it used to be. Then it was like, because if you could fucking make it back then with no, you know, there's no Instagram or sending people links and shit. Like you had to have something in your hand and go to a person and go, here, man, look at this.
Right. Like,
if you wanted to call somebody, they had to fucking be home. You know what
I mean? Right. Sure.
It was like being in Los Angeles, you really had to be in Los Angeles or be in New York City because you had to go see people. Now I can be anywhere. But back then you had to be physically in the zone. And so that back then was a special time, because back then it was important to go out partying. It was important to go out with the bands and do the shenanigans, because that's how we got gigs, and you know, it was a different world. And so you couldn't just sit back at home and sit on your Instagram and fling shit around all day. You had to, it was very tactile, and it was really fun, and I miss that, you know.
I'm right behind you age wise. I'm 51. I'll be 52 this year. And so I remember, you know, having to call somebody and they had to be home, and you know, we joke around with our kids, and you know, they always have phones. And what did you do when you had to get picked up from somewhere? I was like, you would wait. You'd wait until someone picked you up,
and you had to stay in that one spot, or you deviated, you're fucked. Yeah. They would come, and it was a cluster or whatever. Those are special times, man. I love what you're doing. I think it's all cool. And people, all the kids I see are all, most of them that are into photography are into film at some level. They want, now my theory on that is like, you're going to shoot film. You don't know what you're shooting. You're just shooting film, and then you're sending it somewhere and they're sending you a fucking digital file or something. And so essentially you're doing at the end of it, you're going to have some shitty scan of a shitty negative.
Right.
So you've lost kind of all the thing, but it's still fun for them. I think it makes them slow down because they know they've only got 36 frames and they can't just look on the back and keep shooting. So there's a lot of that going on. And I still develop film sometimes, or I'll do a little class and teach a kid or two how to develop in black and white film. And it's still kind of there. It's not gone away. So it's cool. And I think keeps me, I still feel relevant. I mean, I am relevant as I hang out with young people. I'm still working at a good level. I mean, I know all the shit that's going on, and that's how you got to be. Cause I always thought I would be done at 40 and I would have to find some other weird job to do, because I never thought I would be able to be a photographer for this long.
Yeah.
Let alone ramping up still, you know? So.
And now you have a movie about you. So that's what's, you know, that it came full circle. You have a movie and you have a thriving photography career. I mean, I have to say, I love your studio space. I think you said you live and work there. It's amazing. Because yeah, on your website, you get to kind of see how it's all laid out.
Yeah, and it was when I was a little kid, I lived in this home. I came back to my hometown, and my dad was in the Air Force, and just a little redneck town on the Panhandle. Which now it's much different. But I bought this dance studio that all my friends, when I was in like fourth grade, they used to dance here, and. Wow. So I bought it, the building, 4 years ago, and gutted it and then made it into a work live space.
Amazing. So, that's really inspiring.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. So living the dream, and life is good, man.
Would you mind if I real quick shouted out sponsors? I almost always forget to do this.
Of course.
We have, I think, two sponsors in particular. One of them is Main Street Jukebox up in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, owned and operated by Tom Lefevre, who is a Delta Bravo Urban Exploration Team member. In fact, he just yesterday, he posted some pictures from Wilmington, Delaware. He ran down some old pictures of Bob Marley, who I never realized lived there for a little while.
Wow. And so
these cool pictures and they're just like Polaroid pictures of Bob Marley kicking a soccer ball on the sidewalk. And he matched that up. And it's kind of a wrinkled old photo, which makes it really, really even better. So Tom Lefevre, Stroudsburg, Main Street Jukebox. And I thought of that when you said the Ramones, because his Main Street Jukebox logo is actually the Ramones logo. He just changed all the word.
So cool.
Yeah. So Tom's good people.
That's awesome. Then, sorry, go ahead.
No.
You just reminded me, and I could do this all night, but you reminded me of this other, I think it's the band where the bands were here. I think it's the same guy, or maybe it's somebody different, that reached out to me and was like, they were stalking where I shot. Gosh, dang it. My Chemical Romance.
Okay.
And it was shot in like outside of San Francisco at this random Korean deli. And they like were like, they had been spending all this time looking for the spot.
Yeah.
It's crazy the amount of effort.
Yep.
And then they wrote me, and I was like, I could save you some time, dude. I could just, you know, I could look on my thing. And I did. I went on a contact sheet for this guy or girl, I believe it was a guy, and just sent him a picture of like the deli. And then he looked up where it was and went to it.
See, I think it is the band was here guy, because he's very good at finding locations that stump a lot of other people. And I've done that too. I've reached out to a couple of photographers to get any little bit of intel. Do you remember where this is? And what was kind of cool is it's happened in reverse a few times. There's a photographer, Jeanette Beckman, who took a lot of pictures of Run DMC in the early days. She's a British photographer. She did a lot of photography in England first and then came over here in the mid 80s, I think, or maybe late 70s. Anyway, she got on one of our group discussions, and she asked, she's like, look, I took this picture of EPMD. I don't remember what street it's on. Does anybody remember? And so we did the homework and we kind of figured it out, and we told her the address. That was kind of cool, because, you know, that's not usually how it happens. Sure. But a lot of times if you ask a photographer, they do remember, or they'll share an amazing story, which just makes the whole experience richer. But yeah, a lot of work goes into this, especially if you're only in town or in a city for a little while, maybe on a short visit. And if the photographer gets back to you, I remember when you got back to me, because, you know, I hold my breath a little bit. I typed out that letter and I sent you the finished movie. I'm like, I hope he likes it. And I hit send, And I remember I was at work and I was in this like real serious meeting, and I looked down at my iPad and it had beeped, and all I saw was, dude. And I was like, oh, that's the reaction we want.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So I was so excited. And then when we posted it, when we finally said, here it is to everybody, when you sort of made it even better by saying like, this is really emotional for me. I love that. That was so real. That reaction was, you know, what we hope for and what we would love for everybody to feel when we're sharing these things. We're not making any money off this. We're just doing it because we love pop culture, and I like the Beastie Boys, and other people like horror movies. There's so many different ways to go with this. We just like celebrating the things that we love. So
yeah, it makes it. I've been lugging my negative room. I mean, have you seen pictures of inside my negative room? I have like a bunker, like a safe room that I built with two steel doors, and it's got.
Oh wow! Just
the boxes of negatives and the folders, and it's amazing. But I've been having that shit in storage units for 20 years, and like everyone's like, "What the fuck, man? What are you gonna do with all?" I mean, it's what are you gonna lug that shit around your whole life? I'm like, well, I'm gonna buy a place in Florida. I'm gonna make it the oasis, and I'm gonna build a room, and I'm just gonna have that where I can just sit in there and like just reflect on all the shit I did, and it'll all be organized. And I bought a big light box. I sit in there and I tell stories, and I did a podcast for a while. It was very cool. And where we told stories, people would come in and we told stories about bands. Yeah. And the goal was to kind of put down audio tracks of stories so it would make my book easier. And that was really cool. I don't have time anymore, but
of course. Yeah. Right.
But now I, you know, doing, as you said, it's like, it costs me shit tons of money to employ people to just scan. I've made not even $1 off of any of it, other than it brings me a lot of joy. And
yeah,
and when
and other people too. Yep.
Yeah, so it's really cool for me. And I, like I said, my side thing is my print shop, which I'm gonna not sell a lot of shit. Like a lot of photographers just seem like they're selling everything they've shot because I guess it's their job. I'm just gonna be selling select of my favorite images from a lot of my favorite bands. Yeah. And it'll just be limited a number of them for real fans to purchase, and that will bring me joy. So
yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, so that'll be really cool.
Oh, before I forget, one more sponsor. That's Kevin Bednarz. He has three different spots for the Percival Pub, the Ashburn Pub, and Percival Eats in Northern Virginia. And he's also a big Delta Bravo guy. He just went out to Zion and Arches and took some awesome photos out there. And he's a big sponsor of our podcast. He's been a guest on here too, as somebody who loves and goes out and hits spots and likes to tell stories. So, hey, I don't want to keep you too much longer. I can't thank you enough for the time you gave us, because like you were saying, I could do this all night long. I would love to hear all these stories. I'm going to have to find your old podcast if it's still out there.
It's there. It's called Stories from the Vault.
Okay.
It's on all the, there's probably like 15 episodes.
Nice.
There's some good ones on there.
Awesome. I'll check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some good ones. I've done a lot of weird shit like that. There's another YouTube channel I have called Man Shit. There's Stories from the Vault. There's a lot of things out there. If you did.
What's the, one of the things I saw is that you've done something, and I think you mentioned it earlier, called Boat. Is it BOTE?
That's the company that I work for full time. And that was started out as just a fun thing to do when I was back in Florida about 12 years ago. They started out as a small paddleboard company, but now they've evolved into, I think, the biggest one in the world. And we're all over the world. So that's my main job now. And I essentially just travel the world shooting with a marketing team, a video guy and a producer, and we run around, shoot videos and shoot cool stories on interesting people and run around, and it's amazing. So that's kind of, and we just put out we just put this out, which is really cool.
For that big book.
So that the book, I don't know if you saw that, but it's a 400 page book of all my photos, 450 wow. pages, limited run. So I think we're making 200 of them, something like that. So that's a really big part of my life right now. Before I forget, so whoever your homies are, like in your little group from this project, just send me their names and I'll shoot some pictures to you guys.
Oh, that would be amazing. Well, you're stuck with me now. We're connected forever.
You can kind of send me like the bro message. Hey man, you got any like whatever band, and I'll just send you shit. I enjoy doing that. So,
well, I'm not going to hassle you at all, but I do value our connection. I'm really glad.
Likewise, dude. I so appreciate you and thank you for your effort on that. That means a lot. And thanks for having me on your podcast.
Absolutely. And thanks for just being so open to it. And so obviously you like telling stories. You've had a lot of cool things happen to you. Some are funny, some are scary. So awesome. Thank you so much, Sean. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Later, bro.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.